Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. If you listened to our last podcast episode, you know that I've been interviewing friends and other hoof care providers about laminitis rehab. We're in that time of year when laminitis episodes usually spike due to the spring grass and those metabolic horses just not being managed quite as tightly as they should be. This week, I chatted with Maggie Lambert, who is a hoof care provider based out of Colorado, who has been on the podcast before, and she talked about one of her own personal horses and how she rehabbed him from a previous navicular diagnosis, which turned into a laminitic diagnosis. Well, I know that you've been on the podcast before, but I was wondering if you could just give a little information about your journey in hoof care and the area that you service and kind of what you're doing now in the hoof care realm.
Absolutely. My name is Maggie Lambert, and I'm based in Southern Colorado. I run Diamondback Farrier Services with my husband. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. I've been a farrier for about 4 years now, and I'm passionate about riding in the backcountry with my husband and our herd. And then we have 3 Mustangs and 1 Rocky Mountain, and he's the special guy we'll be discussing more about today.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I realized that he was one of your own. So that's awesome. And I mean, you know that I'm trying to do a bit of a series on laminitic cases and rehab. And especially this time of year, I don't know if you guys have the same issues that we do, but we often get a huge spike in laminitis cases in the spring because of the spring grass and horses having, you know, insulin issues while as they're trying to graze all this, you know, new grass shoots coming up. And I wanted to give hope to owners and just some protocols and advice to follow to help their own horses. So I'd love to hear a bit more about that case. So if you want to start and just say maybe how you met him and what symptoms you noticed when you first, you know, came across his case.
Yeah. So where we're at now in Southern Colorado, we don't have a lot of really fresh, super green grass. It's more native grasses. But when I was working and living in Northern Colorado, we tended to see a lot more of the onset of cases because a lot of people have irrigated pasture up there. But I met Cedar in December of 2024. He's a 12-year-old Rocky Mountain gelding, and he was used for leisurely trail riding with his owner at the time. I actually met him when we were living in Kentucky for a brief time after we got married to be closer to family. And the owner was basically having issues scheduling her farrier, but was also wanting to transition out of shoes. So she sought me out along with her friend as well. So I pulled shoes off of him that December. He was in a heel toe package. Basically, are you familiar with like heel caulks on shoes, on metal shoes?
I'm not really. Yeah. So if you could tell us a little bit about what that is, that'd be great.
Yeah. So something you can look up too for visualization is like a heel and toe shoe. So basically it'll have a little extra metal material, like a toe grab at the toe. And then they'll have a little heel caulks, which is just adding height to the heels. It's not to the shoe overall. So it's not like a wedge shoe, if that makes sense. So they're more like little blocks that are forged in, or sometimes you can also just buy the shoes pre-made as well.
Oh, cool. All right. And so what's the purpose of him being in that shoe when you met him? Was there like a reason that he was in it?
Yeah. So he was actually diagnosed with navicular changes. And so that was the farrier's reason for choosing that package. But that package was also on her other horse as well, who was not diagnosed. I was never able to get a hold of that farrier or her previous vet to discuss the diagnosis and get the radiographs or to just see what he was thinking in terms of his case. But he was a horse that really wasn't ridden terribly often, especially since she had the two. So it was more like just kind of pulling him out of the pasture a time or two a week, more so often in the summer when they would go out on trail rides with their friends.
Okay. Yeah. And so you met him and was he like actively lame when you met him?
No, he actually wasn't. He had a lot of wall, which was great in terms of transitioning him to barefoot. So I did pull his shoes and had pretty awesome success with him the first few months of going barefoot. But one of the first things that I actually noticed when I was pulling his shoes was that he had toe flares in his dorsal wall, which was the one was especially more noticeable on the right front. And then he also had event lines, which was concerning to me, but he also was really, really long. So there's also a possibility of sometimes seeing mechanical laminitis as well. So I was considering that and making all my decisions, but he was totally comfortable across all terrain for the first few months before we started to kind of see some more changes in a negative way towards laminitis.
And what was that like, you know, was that he became footsore, or what were the symptoms you were seeing?
Yeah. So all of a sudden, mid-March, April hit, and he started to develop a lot of fat pads, significant behind his shoulder, butt, ribs, and then his neck was very crusty as well. And he even had some kind of fat pads behind his eyes. I don't know if you've seen that before.
Yeah.
But that was the first time that I've seen that.
Yeah, I have seen it on some metabolic horses where it's almost like a swelling and that orbital depression above their eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then another thing that I started to see was his feet started to have separation, especially in the fronts, and then excess flaring in the hinds. And they were on a super tight 3 to 4 week schedule. So I knew that there was something else systemic going on.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Then he started to be a bit foot sore as well.
Oh, man. So what was the change? Was it like grass coming up, or what was the change from when he was really comfortable overall terrain to when you started noticing the changes? Was he just gaining weight, or was it a diet change?
So he was gaining weight. He was on free choice hay and then also access to pasture 24/7. And the grass started to really shoot up in mid-March and April that year. And then it was also super muddy as well, which didn't help when his walls started to become a bit more weaker due to the inflammation.
Yeah, right. And Rocky Mountain horses, they, you know, in I always think of them as easy keepers and that they could be, you know, more predisposed to metabolic issues. But we don't have many out here. So I don't even know. Like, I mean, do you see a lot of them? Is that true? Like, are there metabolic cases of Rocky Mountain horses?
Yep, absolutely. Definitely a genetic component in it. And then actually, this poor owner, she had only ever really owned Rockies, and she had a Rocky previously as well that she wasn't able to manage with EMS as well in the past.
Oh, gosh. And so you said when we started that this horse is your horse. So how did you end up taking over ownership of him?
Yeah. So as soon as we started to see these changes and the foot soreness, I did refer her to get the hay tested. And then I also recommended her to talk with Mad Barn about adjusting his diet with the hay test in hand. I also recommended to get him off the green pasture or at least muzzle him. And then I recommended blood work as well. So this is about April when I'm making these recommendations.
Of last
I did
year.
Suspect, yes, of last year. Oh, wow. Yeah,
I know.
But we did do a round of casting in May to try to increase his comfort, and it did help a little bit. And he did start to show some small signs of improvement in his comfort levels, but then he started to take a turn for the worse in June pretty quickly. So he had been able to lose some weight, and then he quickly put it back on. And it's kind of crazy how much these horses can change from appointment to appointment when we see them as farriers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, it can be concerning when you show up to a horse that is doing pretty well, and the next time you go and you see a few issues, and then the time after that, it's like all of a sudden you can show up to like a full-blown founder case, even in just a few weeks.
Yeah. And it's pretty sad too, to kind of like see them change emotionally. Like I look at horses' eyes a lot, and you could kind of see like the brightness kind of fading as he was getting more uncomfortable.
Oh, poor guy.
So she ended up getting the blood work in June, and his insulin was over 80. I can't find the exact papers, but I know it was over 80. And then he was diagnosed with EMS by the vet. He also tested high in his leptin and T3. And so right after that, he was switched to a low NSC diet and taken off grain and grass after the blood work came in. But he wasn't very happy and he wasn't even wanting to hang out with his buddies or move much due to his discomfort and weight levels, and he was even reluctant to move on softer ground.
So he was sore even after switching to a low-sugar diet?
Briefly, because she wasn't able to make the diet adjustments when it was first kind of on set in April because she was trying to find a good hay source.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of hard because you see a lot of super, super protein-heavy grass in Kentucky. I think there's something about some kind of minerals, I can't remember, that is found in that soil as compared to other parts of the U.S.
Yeah, and I know that, I mean, I'm not sure if everybody listening knows this, but ECIR, the Equine Cushing's and Insulin Resistance Group, they recommend for protein to be less than 10% in the hay if you have a metabolic horse, because it can, for whatever reason, trigger laminitic issues if it's over 10% in some horses. So yeah, that's, I mean, it must be hard if the hay around you is just naturally, you know, has elevated protein.
Yeah, and it's like, how much can that actually change when you're soaking it? Because the hay she was feeding was over 18% protein, but it was below, I believe, a 12% NSC. But obviously the goal of ECIR is to also have things below 10%.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and that is, you know, just a shout out to ECIR. If anybody wants to go to the website, ecirhorse.org, they have so much information to really get into the nitty gritty of the diet. If people are wondering, you know, what is a low sugar and starch diet or what does that mean? They're a fantastic resource. So I wanted to add that just so that people, if they're like so confused and hadn't heard of that before, they can check that out too.
Yeah, I guess another thing to throw out for all the people out there that their horse may be experiencing subclinical or acute laminitis is to talk about the seasonal rise for blood work.
Yeah, definitely. Did Cedar have PPID as well, or was he just insulin resistant?
He was actually just insulin resistant. I wasn't sure at first because he is a little bit older, but the blood work came back reasonable for his ACTH, but his insulin was just sky high.
Yeah, yeah. And that's tough too. I mean, because there are cases of PPID where the blood work can come back normal. And it's just like you're saying, it's like the time of year the person or the vet tested, because between January and June, ACTH can be naturally low for most horses. And then, as you're saying, with the seasonal rise, which typically starts in July for the Northern Hemisphere, the ACTH will rise just to help, you know, trigger the horse to grow a winter coat. But for horses with PPID, that can lead, you know, it doesn't have an appropriate response to that rise, and that can trigger laminitis. But people who test in, you know, February, the ACTH, if it comes back normal, it might not be normal in the fall when that seasonal rise comes around if it's an early case. So yeah, it's definitely important to mention.
Yeah, and sometimes some of the studies say that it can be up to four times of the reference level of ACTH when you do test in these seasonal rises. So it's definitely important to discuss with your vet and make sure they're knowledgeable on that. And then also the way that they're sending the blood off as well and who they're sending it to.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that's something where, you know, I'm super fortunate to have a really great vet, you know, a bunch of really great vets in my area who are really well versed in blood work handling and testing protocols. But like we mentioned ECIR earlier, they also have a ton of information on how to handle the blood and how to, you know, different labs and reference ranges. And so if that's something that you, if anybody wants to, you know, kind of educate themselves a bit more on that, it's just a free resource online that has so much information.
Absolutely. And it's something that I send to owners, even if their horses are just showing signs of event lines or anything like that, or they're heavily obese. It's just kind of something good to put out there into their minds. And it's just such a wealth of knowledge that's out there for free.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so you're talking about how you had him, so the owner was trying to source, sorry, we got sidetracked.
Yeah.
The owner was trying to source hay that was safe. And did she end up finding a good hay source?
Yeah, so she did find one, but it took a couple months to source it. What was nice is that her county offered free hay testing through the Ag Center So she was able to get a couple different hays tested. But around June, she made the decision to pass him on to us because managing a metabolic horse wasn't really the right fit for her and her other horses. And we have already had a horse with EMS because we own Mustangs, which most have a tendency to be that way, or easy keepers. So we agreed to take him on and begin his rehabilitation. And he was just a tricky case for an average owner to manage. And I don't blame her at all, especially when you have other horses that might need some extra hay or any other dietary needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have owners that I work with that have, the hardest is when I have an owner that has two horses out together and one's a hard keeper and one's one that is prone to laminitis. And you know, they want to have their horse have a companion, but they need to feed one more or feed, you know, one of them second cut hay, or it's really, I mean, I'm thinking of one specific barn right now where the owner is trying the best she can for these two polar opposite horses. And it's so difficult unless you know, force them to live separately. It's really hard to manage horses with such different needs unless you're really well set up for it. So I totally understand. And so was this when you were still living in Kentucky?
Yeah, so we left there in July.
Okay, so I was going to ask if that was, you know, what was the living environment when you took him over? And was that in Kentucky or did you kind of take him over and then move to Colorado pretty soon after?
So it was actually like a super brief transition. We ended up just leaving him there for the time being because it's very, very difficult to source a dry lot in Kentucky. So we ended up leaving him for a few weeks there, and then we came back to Kentucky from a vacation, and then we were actually moving to Idaho briefly when we were at the school there, and we were luckily able to source some really, really great grass hay, and then we started by soaking it and then adding a ration balancer. We actually did Mad Barn Amenity, which worked really well for the soil levels and minerals there. And then we also always feed our horses loose white salt, which you can buy at Tractor Supply. For 50 pounds, it's usually like $7 to $12. So it's a really great deal. And we just put that out in a grain pan, free choice for our horses. And then we also decided to add a little bit of a vitamin E supplement. And then if he was uncomfortable, we would boot him. And if not, we would keep them off.
Yeah. And that's very similar to, I mean, obviously we have, you know, similar schooling, but that's very similar to what I do even at my farm for rehabs in terms of like booting them if they're uncomfortable, but then also, you know, taking the boots off if they are comfortable so that their feet can interact with the ground and they can breathe and move over varied terrain. And so I love that, you know, it's like a very like-minded sort of thing to do. And it seems like it went really well for him, right?
Absolutely. And you probably see a lot more moisture. So it is very beneficial to have them have times out of boots as compared to just leaving them in as well, which we don't have that issue so much over here.
Right. Yeah. Well, probably in Kentucky, right? But not in Colorado.
No.
Yeah.
And then what we kind of noticed was that managing his diet, even if we weren't exercising him right away, when he was still sore and uncomfortable, he did start to slowly lose weight. But another thing that's important to talk about is to not heavily restrict your horse immediately because they can put on more weight. I don't know if you've seen cases of people doing this.
You know, I haven't seen, I usually have the other end of the spectrum where people don't, you know, they just feed and feed and feed. But I have heard of studies where, you know, they put ponies in like a starvation paddock, quote unquote. And they ended up, there was something where like the fat cells ended up releasing toxins or something. I'd have to look it up and I'm going to butcher the study. I looked at it probably 10 years or maybe not 10 years ago. It was probably like 2018 when I was looking at it, but maybe I should try to find that.
Yeah, I've seen it as well. So what I always reference owners to do is to keep feeding them the same amount of hay, but soak it and sometimes even double soak it. So you'll soak it for a while, then drain the water, then soak it again. Especially if your hay, sometimes even a lot of dirt comes off of it. But that's something that we did with him and kept his hay intake the same, just so he didn't go into that like starvation mode and his body thought that he had to hold on to more body fat.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just kind of, I quickly looked it up. So one is, you know, obviously restricting overweight horses has a few risks, one being hyperlipidemia, where there's the rapid breakdown of fat stores. And I think that's what I was thinking of when I was referencing the study, is that their body is just trying to like eat itself. Basically, it's trying to break down fat because it's not getting enough nutrients. And that can cause it can overwhelm the liver. But something else it says, I'd have to look more into this, is that withholding forage for extended periods can increase insulin resistance. Because like just like you were saying, it causes fat cells to hold on to fat rather than burning it. So back to what we were talking about is just you were noticing that he was losing some weight just on the dietary changes.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially we really don't want to put too much pressure on a horse that's already in a sensitive state in terms of forcing them to move. But that's just what I've had success with personally. But we did eventually start to do in-hand work and exercise when he was more comfortable on his feet.
Awesome. And so it was mostly, like you were noticing, it was the diet that played the largest role for him. And so what did that look like? Obviously, I mean, do you have a dry lot? Do you have, you know, what's his turnout like? And you said that he was on tested hay and Omneity and the loose salt. Is that still what he's on now?
Yeah, actually it is. And he's actually occasionally getting, like if we're doing heavy work, because he's back into riding now, I do feed him a little bit of hay pellets in addition. But other than that, his diet has remained the same. And it is a dry lot, which works out super excellently because we manage all of our horses the same way since they're all such easy keepers. So he's pretty happy living in our herd.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so great. I mean, I have Mustangs too, and, you know, they're all easy keepers, and I know how hard it can be to manage them. But, you know, once you have a good setup and watching them thrive in a setup where they're still able to move and have friends and have good, safe forage, it's really nice to be able to see them in an environment that's conducive to, like, them being healthy and not a risk for their feet or their body.
Absolutely. And it's like kind of like he has a new lease on life. He's very happy. He actually has discovered that he likes to push cows, although he will turn away if a bull is charging at him.
I mean, that's smart, right?
But, yeah, fair enough. My other Mustang is just a little bit too brave.
Oh, gosh.
And we'll hold our ground, but we always take them out together, and we're hoping to do some more pack trips this year as well with him.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's so he's like in work and ridden and happy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's done super great. The only time I've seen from his rehab till now a little bit of discomfort was probably just maybe not even consecutive days, but a day here and a day there when we were having our really, really cold weather snaps, especially when it was like in the 60s the day before and then it would really drop. I saw him a little bit foot sore, but I was thinking a little bit more like, in terms of winter laminitis, it wasn't more due to his weight or anything at that time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we see winter laminitis here, unfortunately, because of that. I mean, this past winter, we had wind chills like negative 25 degrees Fahrenheit, which is not normal for our area, but we had it on multiple occasions. And so we do see that winter laminitis. And but sometimes when it wasn't getting that cold, I mean, it's hard to differentiate between like, oh, is it just because the ground's like super hard and frozen, or is it actually like winter laminitis, like the restriction of blood flow? But I mean, really, it doesn't hurt to treat it as if it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All about comfort.
Yeah, definitely. And so we had talked a little bit, you know, before hopping on the call about the importance of having a really good team. So I would love you to touch upon, you know, how did you build your team around rehab, or how, when you're rehabbing a case, what do you look for in terms of who you're working with or how you interact with the other professionals, or what that looks like for you guys?
Yeah. So it's something I like to call like a collaborative care team, which it can include vets, chiropractors, body workers, nutritionists, dentists, trainers, and all the other equine professionals out there. It's super, super important when you have a rehab case that everybody is on the same page with open lines of communication, and that's going to up your chances of success and having the best interest of that horse in mind. I've been in cases where everybody wasn't on the same page, or some people wanted to try one thing, but the other people didn't feel comfortable with it. So it's all about finding either a happy medium with working together or trying one thing. And if it doesn't work, then trying something else. But we're all extensively trained within our own specialty is the way that I like to think about it. And we can kind of offer collaborative knowledge to one another to come up with comprehensive plans for rehabbing these tricky cases that we see.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really great to come into those cases like in a curious mindset and wanting to work with others, like you're saying, collaboratively and learning from others in those situations. Because a lot of times, you know, it can be tough if you're on a case and it's, you know, there's a lot of disagreement and then it seems like there's not a united front for the owner and then the owner gets confused. So it's really nice when everybody can work really well together and sort of come up with a plan together that's good for the horse and that works for like what the owner can do. And yeah, but it can be tricky to get there. So that's definitely really important.
Yeah. And if you just think about it in terms of laminitis, if you're seeing stretching in the white line as the farrier, we can improve mechanics and comfort with our trimming and shoeing. And then a vet can identify and diagnose metabolic or inflammatory triggers. And then a body worker can work on the compensatory muscle patterns. And then the nutritionist can also address the necessary diet changes for metabolic cases as well. So it's kind of thinking like everybody adds this little piece to the puzzle and then you bring it all together and then you have a really good chance of helping that horse.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds like it went really well for Cedar and I'm so glad that he's with you and that it sounds like he's doing great. And you know, I mean, it's really nice to hear more of these stories because I don't think people realize, you know, for so long, founder and laminitis was one of these like death sentences for horses. And now as we know more about it, it's so amazing how well these horses can recover with the right management and how like they can go back to riding and productive lives. And, you know, it's not even that they have to be retired and just live, you know, with fear of setbacks forever. It's something where the management plays such a huge role. So I'm really thankful that you're able to jump on here and share a bit of what you did with him. So thank you.
Absolutely. And if anybody ever wants to see pictures of his hooves, I have them all throughout the documentation. So you guys can feel free to reach out to me on my business page, Diamondback Farrier Services on Facebook, if you're interested in discussing more.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you. Yeah. And I guess, you know, before we sign off, do you have any other last minute advice for owners?
Yeah, I think that everything should be at the horse's pace and at what the horse dictates. So it's very good to think in terms of that. We don't want to over push them when they're in a sensitive state, especially because that would lower our chances of success or even contribute to setting them back on their track to getting better. So that's just something that I like to think about as well, because some people are in a rush to go back to riding or do other things with their horse that horse might not be ready for at that time. So it's just kind of finding the sensitive balance and listening and seeing what your horse is saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you sharing his story and I would love to chat more with you in the future. I always love when we connect and you have such cool, you know, stories to share. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a pleasure to be on here.
All right. Well, have a good rest of your day.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Bye.
I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person, and chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.